What's up, and welcome back to another episode of the Bounce Back Bogey podcast. I'm Braden. I'll be your host today. Along with me are Craig and Mike. We got Super Bowl. We got a little waste management, some live golf, some other stuff going on. But I know last week, Craig and I were playing guilty coming off a boys trip in Winnipeg, and now we're feeling the effects a little bit. I was a little sick last week, recovering now. Craig was a little sick, so I think we might have all got COVID at that social in Winnipeg, but who the fuck knows? But let's start off with the weekend. Mike, what'd you do this weekend? What did you think about the Super Bowl? Let's hear it.
I had just a boys' weekend. It was amazing. Watched the waste management, watched the Super Bowl, got invited to play golf on Sunday morning. It was raining a little bit, so I opted out. But, you know, there are a few things in life that bring me more joy than just being on a couch with a beer with the boys. And that's all I did on Saturday and Sunday.
Love it. Watch some golf, watch some football. What'd you think of Mahomes just being the GOAT?
So for once in my life, I was actually correct on a bet or two. Ooh. And it wasn't even that I knew what to do. I just was tired of betting against Mahomes. And just decided that I'd bet on the best player. And you give him back the ball when he needs a touchdown, he's going to get a touchdown. He's going to win you the game. So,
yeah, totally. They 49ers fucked up. In hindsight, they fucked up the overtime rules, the new overtime rules, where getting information, taking the ball second, is so valuable. And I didn't really look into this until after. But, yeah, getting that perfect information. The Chiefs had a 4th-and-1. In their own territory where they might have punted, who knows, if they had the ball first. But obviously after the 49ers picked the field goal, they had to go for it. So having that perfect information to know what you need to do is so valuable. And they said, so like the point of taking the ball first is if both teams score, then you get the ball with sudden death rules now. Mm-hmm. But the Chiefs said if they would have had the ball second, they would have and needed to score a touchdown to tie, they would have gone for two in the win anyway. So
yeah,
that perfect information outweighs the third possession OT.
I was more shocked with the fact that it sounded like from the San Francisco camp that they didn't go over the OT rules at all.
I know that's ridiculous. That's
yeah,
like obviously they have a super super sharp smart head coach in Kyle Shanahan. He's like offensive genius, but to not
horrendous game manager.
Yeah, actually this game management wasn't terrible, but historically not good. Yeah,
wait, so was the difference that you could score if they scored a touchdown, did Kansas City still get the ball? What was the difference? I know the quarter.
Yes.
Oh, it was, because the commentators fucked that up too then. No, because I thought they said Romo or somebody said that if San Fran scored on the first drive, it was over. Maybe I'm remembering that wrong.
No, that was the old rules. That's the regular season rules. And the old rules, actually, like old rules, where if you even scored a field goal, it was over.
Yeah.
Which is the worst OT.
That was bad.
They changed that a few years ago, where if you score a field goal, the other team gets to possess the ball. And if they score a touchdown, they win. But now in playoffs only, if the first team scores a touchdown, the other team still gets a possession. So having that information advantage of going second is very valuable. So anyway, it was a good game. I wanted the 49ers to win. But like I said a few pods ago, I like dynasties too. Like I think it's cool when Chiefs are just so dominant. Mahomes played phenomenal in OT, but the 49ers defense really shut them down in the first half especially. And then that muff punt just kind of swayed everything. I was watching with a buddy in Edmonton, and it was like the Chiefs did nothing all game, and that one muff punt, they scored one play later, and it's like the Chiefs did nothing and they're winning the game all of a sudden.
Yeah. Just,
how does that happen? But good stuff. Craig, what'd you get up to this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, the week started off tough, getting fired from my fake job as a podcast host. But besides that, you know, it was a great week. I'm a team player. I think, Brandon, I think you're gonna kill it. So, yeah, first job I've been fired from. Besides, I didn't technically get fired as a dishwasher, but I showed up and someone else was doing my job. So,
nice.
I guess that's, I don't know, kind of firing. And then, yeah, I watched the Super Bowl, obviously. I thought the first half was so fucking boring. I don't know. There wasn't a whole lot happening. I was kind of flipping between the golf, too, though, so I probably wasn't as into it as I should have been. The second half was insane. Loved the OT. And, yeah, just a wild game. It was pretty sweet. I'm pissed. Jackson Mahomes is going to be in the spotlight again for another 6 months, which is just a loss for all of society. Somebody should politely, respectfully put a bullet in his head. But Patrick, I mean, he is the man. I really do wish he would just float his brother 10 mil to fuck off and never be seen again. But congrats to him. Kelsey has everything in life. Even though Taylor Swift is a six, it's still pretty cool that he's dating one of the most famous people in the world. And yeah, that's kind of all I had this weekend. Ben, if you can't tell, I've been sick as a dog since Winnipeg. I think I got the worst case of COVID from everybody. Was coughing, headaches, chills, everything. So I'm going to power through this, though.
Good stuff. You sound good, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of a hot voice.
Good stuff. Yeah, I watched with a buddy in at a buddy's house in Edmonton. And eventually we got to get this guy on the pod. His name is Humper, Connor Humphreys, and he has one of the best intro to golf degenerate bets of all time. He said he started golfing, more seriously golfing during COVID, like didn't really golf before then, and said within a year, I'm going to break 105, which to us, like, that's not that hard of a feat, but he had literally not picked up a golf club and played on a course that seriously before then. So he was training, he was getting... Actually, he didn't get lessons, which really fucked him. He should have been getting lessons, but he put time into this round, had to go out and shoot 105, and it wasn't even fucking close. So he lost a significant, I won't say it for his identity, but he lost a significant amount of money. But good way to get into the golf space. It made him confident now. At least he can come out with the boys and like get around the golf course. So good stuff. We'll have to get him on the pod to get a deep dive into what happened in that bet. But let's get into the waste management here. Craig, let's start with you. What were your thoughts on the week?
Yeah, obviously, I mean, starting with the winner, Nick winning was really cool. The big storyline, I guess, was probably the liquor sales and how out of hand all the fans got. I say out of hand. I love it. I think embrace the chaos. This will be my take. So I think Zach Johnson and Billy, I don't dislike Billy Horschel. I really hate Zach Johnson, but I hated both of them for getting upset. So there's two different, you can be upset when somebody yells and you're over your ball, except for 16, because it's constant noise. But the rest of the golf course, if somebody yells and you're like in your backswing, I get being upset about that. Zach Johnson getting pissed because somebody called him fucking bad captain at the Ryder Cup. Like, dude, you are pathetic. You're a professional athlete. You're 5'4". Don't act like a tough guy. If there wasn't a rope there, everyone in that stadium or on the golf course could pummel you. So I can't stand Zach Johnson. He's definitely in my bad books for a while. The fans being loud is awesome. Chirping the players is awesome. I think that's part of what makes the waste great. I think it would get annoying at every single event, obviously. But at the same time, stay off the golf course. That's the one thing. Like, one streaker every couple of years is fine. But guys jumping into the bunker and making snow angels, like, it's funny. But that's where I'm a little bit, like, the tiniest bit, my toe is over the line. And I'm siding with the guys saying, hey, things got out of hand. But don't ban alcohol sales because of a few guys. Just give them the death penalty if they step foot on the golf course.
I love it. I think though, so yeah, the chirping of players, I think should be allowed all the time. Just not, my hard rule is just not when they're over the ball and in their backswing.
Yeah.
Yell at them after. I think JT a few years ago got like sent a guy off, get him off the tour, like send him off the tournament for saying get in the bunker. That was one of the softest things ever.
Yeah.
That wasn't even at this tournament. I think it should be allowed all the time. Not even at Waste Management, but especially at Waste Management, it should be encouraged, if anything. But that hard rule of no streaking, I'm on board for that. Hard rule of don't yell in someone's backswing. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, so listen, our sport already has people that question if it's a sport or not.
Yeah.
And now you have these soft ass fucking grown men in their feelings because they're getting chirped a little bit. I think Craig said it perfectly. Like, and you, so did you. I think you should be free to chirp them whenever they're not at the ball. As long as it's like obviously not derogatory or anything, just like good wholesome chirps. And my other big issue is that I don't understand how players don't expect this going into this event. Like you know that this event is going to be different than others. You know there's going to be noise in your backswing. You know there's going to be heckling. You know there's going to be chirping. And it just, to me, it looks so soft on Zach Johnson. And I like Billy Horschel most of the time. He's in my bad books now too.
Yeah, it's a shame. I'm Team Billy usually, but he made a bogey. Everybody gets one. Everybody gets one. So we'll, yeah, give him a little bit of breathing
He
room
needs
this
a
week.
bounce back bogey.
He
He
does. He
does.
does. You know who doesn't is Nick Taylor. I don't think he had any doubles all week, but
Three bogeys the whole week.
that's some golf. Started out with a 60, ball in hand all week, but that's obviously anytime, I said this last week, anytime you're threatening to shoot in the 50s, it's a hell of a round. I don't care what the conditions are. Have you guys played with him?
I haven't. My brother has, out of all people, a couple times. And then I know Mike and John. Well, oh yeah, Mike and John. Let's let Mike take the floor with this one.
Yeah, so me and Pards, John McLaudick, a couple years ago on the Vancouver tour, the PGA tour, I think it was the Travelers, it got fully rained out on like a Monday or Tuesday, and they just canceled the event due to flooding. And there was a Vancouver tour event, so Nick Taylor flew home and decided to play in it. John, myself, and Nick, I think we all shot 66 or 67 the first day, so we got paired up in the last group together. And I watched my boy John go toe to toe with Nick. I was one back going into 18. John and Nick were tied, and they were just going back and forth, back and forth. I think John shot 28 or 29 on the back nine to win by one, but it was pretty sweet to see.
Yeah, hands
Also,
down the most putts I've ever seen somebody make from off the green. I watched John's like final 4 or 5 holes, and I swear three of the putt, like he made over 100 feet of putts in those holes. It was incredible.
there's some very good golfers that people don't know about that can compete with very, very good players on their good days. And I got to see it one day.
Yeah. What when was that? Was that a few months before he won at Pebble?
No,
Was that
so
after?
I'm gonna Mike. I think Mike got one thing of that wrong. So that was COVID year, I'm pretty sure. And so Nick was just having a kid, and I could be wrong, but I think this is right. I think Nick couldn't leave the country, or something like that, or he didn't want to, because when he came back, he would have to quarantine for a while before seeing his kid. So I think he was kind of stuck in Vancouver for a bit.
I'm not going to fight you on it, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't COVID year.
I'm 100% sure it was COVID year, and I'm right.
I don't fucking know, but I do know that like this guy is a winner on the PGA Tour, a few time winner on the PGA Tour, and our buddy Johnny Milk beat him by one in that VGT, and Mike was right there as well. So that just shows you the fine lines of like how skilled guys are on lower tours, and how how small the margins are between the PGA Tour and everyone else trying to make it in professional golf. But so yeah, coming down the stretch, he birdies 15, lays up, makes birdie on 15, birdie 16, doesn't birdie 17. 17 with that back pin, not a guaranteed birdie, but it's a hole that usually you expect the winner of the tournament to make on Sunday, but doesn't birdie 17, but birdies 18, not once. Birdies 18 once, does it again in the first playoff hole, does it again in the second playoff hole. Meanwhile, Chucky Hoffman is dicing it up too, birdieing 18 twice. Third time though, Charlie goes in the bunker left, I think. Nikki T, third straight birdie on 18 to win. So that's some nails golfing right there.
How about Charlie's bunker shot?
Where did it go? I was watching Super Bowl at this point.
That was out of the fairway bunker, right? Over the church pew. I think it was pretty pure and like kind of ballsy. It might not have been as hard as it looked on TV at first because he was kind of a little bit on the upslope and he was in a wedge. But it looked cool on camera.
Yeah. The slow-mo looks so sick.
It went middle of the green and he two-putted. Was that the deal? Yeah.
Good stuff. They thought he was going to have to chip out sideways.
Yeah, that was sick. Any other tournament, though, if Charlie Hoffman is threatening to win, it's like, eh. But because it's the Waste Management and he's got the sponsorship and he's wearing all green, little different story. So that was fun to see. But obviously, as Canadians, good to see Nikki T getting it done. Good stuff. Usually this course plays a lot firmer. Obviously, it rained pretty much all week leading up, or not all week, but rain Wednesday, rain Thursday. So the golf course was super soft, playing lift clean in place all week. Guys were spinning it on 16, where if you miss the green, you get booed. There to the left pin, they were spinning it off the green and getting booed, which I absolutely love. But I love seeing the firm golf, and hopefully we get that next week at the Genesis. This was another week of soft golf where everything just kind of, I don't know, you go lights out. Any other thoughts before we move on?
Yeah, I thought we were going to be crediting Craig with the first bet win of the year when Scotty had the lead in round four. You don't usually see him give that up, especially when he's hitting it as good as he was. I think he missed three or four footers in a row on the back nine on Sunday. So back to regular Scotty Scheffler with the putter, I guess.
He is Scott. So nasty with his irons. It's disgusting.
So tee to green, he's unbelievable. Like he's on goat pace right now, tee to green. He's like leading strokes gained every single week. It's crazy.
Yeah. So what's he need to do though? Does he need to go broomstick? Does he need to get canceled and go broomstick or what? He can't just like continually put up goat numbers tee to green and just not win golf tournaments.
I think you take a look at what the winner did this week with not ever seemed like he'd never missed a putt the entire week and he just go to the claw.
Ooh.
Yeah, that might be the next step.
Have you guys ever done that?
I've done everything.
If I hold a putter any other way, I don't think I'm a good enough athlete to hold a putter a different way. I can't even go left hand low. It feels so foreign.
Okay. Let's move on to Liv here. Do you guys watch on again? They got kind of the perfect storm. I'll call it a storm, but they had the window, the Saturday afternoon window between when the second round and third round started for Waste Management was when the last few holes of Liv was playing out. So they once again had the perfect storm for viewing. Did anyone tune in though? That's the real question. Because the leaderboard was sick at the top. DJ was there, Bryson was there, Rom was right there too. Any live thoughts?
I saw one live shot this week, and it was Rom shanking one, and that's about all I saw. And let me say, I'm shocked that he does not shank it more. Because if you've ever been on the range and tried to stand as close as he does to the ball, you shank one every two or three balls.
Especially with, he's got a bit of a belly on him too. Like you can't stand that close and be, I'm not going to call him fat. Like he's a professional athlete, hammers the golf ball, but he's got a bit of a belly on him.
He's a little tummy.
He's got to be bordering on not being able to see the ball sometimes.
I think with the waste going on, Liv was not even at the forefront of my mind, even though I'm still in on Liv. I like the leaderboard. I just looked at the leaderboard. I didn't really watch any shots. I like Matt Wolf, I think, played pretty well. Who else? DJ won,
Well,
right?
DJ
So
fucking won the thing, yeah.
yeah, like I love seeing that, but there's just no, I don't know why, but there's still just no appeal to me to watch a whole lot of it. If
I
there's a
know.
good PGA event on, it's just it just proves that like the money and the event doesn't really mean anything.
Exactly. I know. That's the thing that's just such a kick in the dick to viewers that I get seemingly both tours now are getting so rich. The guys that took the live money are getting rich. The guys that are top guys on the PGA are getting all this equity. Who knows how that's actually going to look and how they can actually cash that into to some money. But yeah, they had, like I said earlier, just the perfect window of viewing opportunity here with DJ Bryson in the final group, Rom right there, and still it doesn't seem like anyone gives a shit, which sucks. But I tuned in. I was on a walk with my kid. I was watching on YouTube on the walk, and I watched the last hole. DJ got line of sight relief. He hit it. He had a one shot lead. Hit it in the right rough. There's a scoreboard just right of the green, and he got line of sight relief to go closer to the fairway and have a better line at the green. What are your thoughts of line of sight for scoreboards and stands and all that?
I'll let Mike start, but one thing I'm gonna say is DJ is sneaky good at that because that's what he did in that US Open win too. He had a questionable line of sight drop, but Mike, you go ahead. What's your opinion?
I think it's hard to say. Like, I understand the rule. I think guys abuse it a little bit. But I think you have to take it on a case by case manner, and it's kind of hard to say it's right or it's wrong. You got to look at it case by case. I think for the most part, it's kind of bullshit. Like,
Yeah.
I think
You
it's one of those
just
things in golf you're not really going to be able to fix. Like it's, I think guys, Bray, you've talked about this before. They bite off a little more than they can chew with like their drops on hazards and stuff. I remember DJ was actually, this is very specific, and I think it was at the AT&T a few years ago, but he had a very questionable drop that the announcers were judging as well on 18. He hooked one into the water and he dropped it like by the green, and they said there was no way it
Yeah.
crossed where he was dropping. But playing partners, when they're, I don't know if it's when they're out of it or if it's a senior status thing, but I'm sure we've all been in tournaments where guys have maybe done something like that. And you're just kind of like, you don't really want to fight them on it, but I don't know. I just kind of bite my tongue in certain situations. And I'm like, ah,
Yeah.
yeah, maybe it crossed up there. That's not what it looked like to me. But I'm usually the last one to speak up unless a guy's blatantly being a prick and cheating.
That's like blatantly cheating though. This was within the rules. I don't think he did anything wrong. I just think the scoreboard's there the week of the tournament, so it's technically an immovable obstruction or whatever the like TIO, who knows? But it's there for the tournament. They're there for the tournament. It's part of the golf course in my eyes. If you're behind the thing, I think you should have to play it. I don't think you should get a free drop. And I think the same should go for grandstands. Like if you're in the grandstand, that's one thing. But if you hit it so far out of the ballpark, if you hit that hot AOC ball that's just fucking going, you have to play that thing over the grandstand. I don't care. Like that's it's part of the deal. Because otherwise, people just there's some tournaments where you see it in some British Opens or some closing holes of tournaments where there's trouble right and there's a grandstand on the left and the bailout is just to blow it in into the grandstand and deal with the drop. And it's just such a cop-out way of playing the hole.
I will say though, you brought up the British Open. The one thing the British does that is better than other events is that if you blast it into the grandstand, you don't get like a free drop. You got to drop it in the fescue. Like they have specific areas that are not mown and they are nasty. And
The
that's your
RNA does
penalty
it,
for it.
bro. Yes. You're right. The RNA actually has some balls and will be like, if you want to drop here, you're gonna drop in this fucking circle that's like some long ass fescue, and you're not going to be pretty close to the hole either. You're going to have to go back to this drop zone. So they at least have a little bit of balls. But yeah, on the PGA Tour, they're pretty pampered. You can blow it in the grandstands and just get a nice little drop.
Yeah, I just don't know how, and I guess it works for a lot of those link style courses and stuff that the British has played at, but I don't think there's a whole lot. You have to be careful with changing that rule at a lot of the North American courses. I just don't know if the way they're doing it might be the most fair. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
Maybe I'm out to lunch. I don't know.
It probably is the most fair, and everyone gets relief, and then no one can complain. But also, no one could complain the other way if you just never got relief too. But I get it. I get it. Let's move on. So one thing that is pretty polarizing on LIV is the music that's blasting the whole broadcast. I'm sure in person it's kind of sick. Like, you get to watch some golf and listen to some tunes. But what are your thoughts on music in the LIV events, or just thoughts like music when you play golf, when you practice? Would it be okay during competitive rounds or any of that? Craig, let's start with you.
Yeah, I'm very pro music on the golf course. I usually don't like being the DJ because I kind of have, people don't like my taste in music. Like, I'm just blasting Zach Bryan and getting everyone depressed the whole round. but I love it on the golf course. I do think if you're on a public track, like, don't maybe put it full volume where everyone can hear. And like, then if another group's playing music, it just sounds like shit and it's like noise pollution. Yeah. But I don't really care if someone does. Like, it doesn't bother me if they're blasting music. As far as on LIV and in pro events, who was the event? There was an event that did a walk-up song a few years ago.
Oh,
right?
That's that team event where
team events.
Yeah. Zurich Classic or whatever.
Find that. I think it's all right. I think it's too gimmicky to put it on like LIV does. To me, it reminds me of the NLL, so like National Lacrosse League. I grew up playing lacrosse. Like, I like lacrosse. I think it's a fucking violent, brutal, fun, fast sport. The people who run the league, I think, are a fucking joke. I wouldn't play music during the game. I think the NBA does it as well.
They do.
I don't know. I'm not big on music throughout the course of play. I just, to me, it seems unprofessional. It kind of takes away from it. But if they want to experiment with like cool things like a walkout song, or maybe like they fucking could play the Rocky theme song as Rory's walking up to the green at Augusta, that'd be kind of cool. But yeah, that's my opinion on music and golf.
Fair enough. Mike?
I listen to music while I practice. I listen to music basically every round I play now. Even like, I'll go and play a tournament up in Kelowna called the Ogopogo. I'll play music in our, as the tournament's going on, in my cart. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I'll disagree with Craig a little bit. I think for certain sports, music in the background's okay. Like basketball, it doesn't bother me at all. Lacrosse, it doesn't bother me at all. I think it keeps the fans a little bit more engaged when it's a little bit, when the pace is a little bit slower. I despise walk-up songs in golf. I think it's the cringe. I think it's the cringiest thing in the world. I think it's terrible.
Yeah. How many guys picked Enter Sandman that first year? It was just like an overwhelming majority of them were just like, Enter Sandman. And it was just after the second or third group, it was like, okay, we've got it enough here. Can't say his name. Mariano Rivera got a bit of a stuffed nose, but yeah, I'm kind of in the same camp as Mike here. Like, I listen while not that I practice anymore, but when I did practice, listen to music, play it pretty much whenever I'm out with the boys, just with playing some music. And I'd be okay if it was a lower level, like if it was a club championship style competitive round. But as soon as you have some real money involved, I think and it gets a little more serious. But the live thing, I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to capture an audience that doesn't currently watch golf, but the extra little bit of, you can sometimes hear music blasting and then other times not hear much music at all, is just more distracting than anything. Like, it's not additive. maybe in person it's different, and we'll have to eventually go on a BBB boys trip to a live event to see what it's like. But
yeah, we could probably get some media passes for some of those.
Yeah,
we should go to like the Afghan Open.
Oh my god, that would be unreal.
Yeah,
I'd be a little AK's scared flying in there, but you know,
Anthony Kim's playing at the next one in Saudi, so could be a trip. We'll see. Yeah, so Live Golf got on YouTube. I don't know what their CW numbers were, but they got 27,000 watching on Saturday as the final groups were coming down. And I was watching on Wednesday. Good Golfers, or good YouTube channel. If you don't know, they were like the OG YouTube golfers, just I don't know how old they are, late 20s or so, that just started a YouTube channel playing some golf, playing mostly scrambles and other fun formats on tour. And they hosted an event, got NBC to broadcast it, and they had about 100,000 people watching on YouTube. So just dummying Live YouTube numbers. What are your guys' thoughts? We'll start with Mike. I know you got some spicy takes here. What are your guys' thoughts on maybe not good specifically? You can mention them if you want, but the YouTube golf space and how big it's become.
I respect, like, so I respect what they've done. I think it's fucking really cool. Like, they host tournaments and they got NBC to broadcast it and they did all this thing. But I'm on record saying that the actual golf that they play is bad.
Yeah.
And the thing that pisses me off is that people, no, it doesn't piss me off. It's frustrating because there's people that
Garrett
will watch
Clark
that
would and, wax you.
Sorry?
Garrett Clark would wax you.
Yeah. So you have guys like Craig who think that they're like PGA Tour level players. And they're barely college players. So that's my only take on it. I respect the hell of what they've done. It's really cool that they've brought, like, they have that big of an audience and they can host events and get a big network to support them and do all this stuff and they can monetize it. But like the actual golf itself is not, it's not good.
That's fair. But they have, as part of the good group now, they have Brad Dahlke, who's played in the Masters, was elite college player, like current pro golfer, I guess. And Luke Kwan, who won a PGA Tour China event, I think. Like, some of them are actually good. Some guys in the YouTube space are really good. Wesley Bryan and George Bryan are really good.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other side of the coin, part of the appeal of some of these guys on YouTube is that they aren't good. And that's why it appeals to a bigger population than just the pro golf space. So I don't know if it's more entertaining per se than on tour, but for some people, I think it would be more relatable and therefore, I don't know, something to watch every now and then. And they do pair up. I know Good had some videos with Minwoo Lee recently. Grant and Micah were playing with Jason Day in a pro-am. Like, they do get pros on there too, which is cool. Cool collab. Mm-hmm. Like, Bryson always is with those guys. So it's good stuff. But Craig, what do you think?
Yeah, so here's my thing. I respect, like Mike, I respect the hell out of, especially Garrett Clark. He kind of seemed to start this. I mean, maybe the Bryant brothers did as well. They were a little bit before him, but they were kind of smaller. He was the first one to really row it, it seemed like.
Yeah.
But don't lump them all into the same conversation, right? So it's kind of like the PGA Tour. Everyone on tour can really play golf. Not everyone on YouTube can play golf. And no. I think that's the mistake a lot of people make. So like Bray said, Luke Kwan, I think, is his name. The other guy I actually didn't even really know about, or at least didn't remember. I think he's fairly new, though.
Mm-hmm.
Those two guys, obviously very, very high-level players. No offense to Garrett Clark or who's the other guy?
I don't know. Grant?
Grant Horvat, yeah. He's got, like, they both have, like, good swings. They're both decent players, but don't lump them into, like, this elite conversation, which I don't think too many people do, and no. They don't really do it themselves too much. They yeah. generally will say, like, when they play with pros on their videos, I haven't watched a ton of them, but I watched a few. They'll usually say, hey, these guys are way better players than me. I'm probably going to get beat, but this is a match. The other thing I do call into question sometimes with a lot of these like Instagram, YouTube guys is the legitimacy of their rounds. I think there's a few generous mulligans for content taken in there. Because you go back and guess what? Golf results are all online. So it's better to be self-deprecating like myself. And we can look up these guys' scoring average in college and high school. So the reality is they're not shooting 4 or 5 under par each round. But again, good for them making a lot of money, and especially good for them for growing the game like crazy in a time where all the professional tours are really dropping the ball on that. Holy fuck, I am cooking tonight. But yeah, they've just done a really good job growing the game. And the PGA and LIV in reality haven't the last couple of years. And final couple notes I got on their event they did, that Desert Open by Good Good. The production value was insane. For a YouTube golf show that started with like a guy in his basement hitting balls, it's pretty incredible. They had Blocky out, Michael Block was playing. Francis Ellis, I don't know if you guys remember him from Barstool. He was priceless on the commentary. He made a couple like racial boundary little jokes in there where he kind of stepped the line. So
He's hilarious. I love
he's
that
good.
guy.
Yeah, I think he does stand up. He's fucking funny. But
Yeah,
yeah,
he's good. Johnny Manziel was in the field.
yep.
What's Willie Wilcox, like PGA Tour player, was in the field. The Bryan Bros, Paige Spiranek, a lot of big names there, so pretty cool.
How's Paige looking?
Good as
Still
always.
looks great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same with who's the other one? Haley Ostrom. I think she was in it.
Yep.
Rock
Yeah.
it.
The old cart girl
Respectfully,
from Papago.
respectfully. What?
Yeah. Oh,
Wow, I didn't know
wow.
that. Yeah,
Nice.
yeah. She's good. But then last thing, if your kids are looking up to these guys to the point where they're seeking their autographs, you have to be a better parent. For sure. So don't let this be your kid's role model, with all due respect. They're not professional athletes. Get them a real fucking role model.
Yeah, I agree with
Like,
that. I will say that what Craig was saying earlier about them being lumped in with pro golfers or elite amateur golfers, they admit that they're not. Like Garrett has said on podcasts and stuff that he knows he's not even close. It's the guys that don't know that are 15, 20 handicaps that are the commenters and the YouTube channels. Like, you're this good. Like, shouldn't you go pro? They know they're not, and they'll admit that. But yeah, I can see why that's annoying. And Mike, I agree with you. I'm sure there's lots of mulligans, especially in like alternate shot events and scrambles. I'm sure they generally don't take too many mulligans, but you never know. But at the end of the day, it's an entertainment product on YouTube. It's not a serious golf event, so who really cares? I'm for it. I watch some YouTube.
I have nothing. They grow the game. They have a good product that people watch, and it's just, it's sweet to see it.
Good stuff. Okay. 57 on the Korn Ferry Tour. That's around. However, 6,200 yards at severe elevation. I don't know if it was ball in hand. Is like I've said this a few times now. Anytime someone's threatening to shoot in the 50s, it's exciting. Something's happening. But is it happening too much now? Because now it's starting, if something happens too much, the appeal wears off. What are your thoughts on this round and rounds in the 50s in general? Mike, let's go with you.
The one thing I'll say is that this guy Cristobal Del Solar, he shot 19 under with a 5 over round in there.
That's
Jesus Christ.
nasty.
Which has to be some sort of record for lowest score with the worst score to par in there. So I think players on every level, especially at the highest level, are just getting better and better and better. And I think the sub 60 rounds or the rounds around 60 will just come from people being better. This tournament itself is kind of known for being a little bit shorter, being at elevation. Not taking anything away from that. I saw a lot of comments from people that have played it ex-pros on Twitter, Instagram, saying that even though the course is short, it's still not a gimme. There's still a lot of tough holes. Mm-hmm. And anytime that you shoot 13 under, I don't care if you are playing from the up tee at your home course, that is a wild score.
Yeah. Yeah. It's impressive. I hate the guys that are just totally just rule it out. Like, oh, it was so short. Like, yeah, I pointed out it was from 6,200. I am not taking anything away from it. That is, you're still making the putts. You're still hitting the golf shots. That's
a hell of a round. I bet you if you look at the people that are saying that it shouldn't count as like a mid 60 round or it's not the same, those are the guys that are not breaking 90.
Yeah, I hate agreeing. Like, I really want to disagree, but no, I think there's not too many low rounds. I think it's 57 is an incredible number, right? Like, we all know the better you kind of get at golf, the harder it gets, right? And like, same thing obviously applies to score. So like 59, I know it's one shot different than 60, but like, that one shot is everything. And 58 going even one shot lower is like exponentially harder, I think. Yeah. And like, so 57 is crazy. That's an unfathomably low number. I think the reality is athletes are just getting better. I mean, people run faster than they did 100 years ago by like quite a bit. But all these improvements in athletics is due to a multitude of factors, right? So you have technology, you have better coaching because people got better, and you have, where am I going with this? Better tech, better coaching, and just all around better mentality too. I think there's that mental thing of like, is 59 possible? And then someone does it and you know it is, right? Mm-hmm. So then more people are able to do it. I think there's definitely a mental barrier there too. I was a psych major, so I know this stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I, whenever I got, and still do to this day, whenever I got a good round going as a junior college golfer, whatever, I would get scared to go low. And mm-hmm. it's a mental hurdle to get yourself to go low. And so if I was a few under through the first few holes, I would start to play too safe instead of just, and those are the rounds where everything is going right. You should continue to just let it go. Just keep going and keep doing what you're doing, because you're obviously playing great. One thing that I wish I would have done as a junior and learning the game was play the forward tees at your home course and get used to going low and shooting low scores. Obviously, it's not going to like count as an official low score or whatever, but I know that's something Bryson's done. And you basically start on the front tee box and keep playing that until you break 60, and then move back a box and keep doing that until you break 60, and just keep going back until you can't, whatever. And that's a good way just to mentally get over the hurdle of going low and shooting low scores. Cause my lowest tournament score, not that impressive. I shot 66 in some Maple Leaf junior tour at my home course from the Blue Tees, like nothing special. But Craig, what's your lowest in a tournament?
Yeah, mine's not that impressive either. Same thing, 66, but I was happy it was that zone am a few years ago. So won that tournament. And then, yeah, just definitely a handful of 67s and above. But lowest non-tournament, I guess, is 64 I shot twice. But I'm the same way as you. Like, I'm very uncomfortable with going low. As soon as I get off to a hot start, I tend to just crumble, and like, my mental state changes for sure. Yeah. But that being said, I'm also a bad athlete, and maybe that's just an excuse for not being as good of a golfer as I wish I was.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, 66 is my tourney low.
Yeah. I'm a mental midget with that. Like, I just can't, I was playing with my buddy Drew, who's my best man at my wedding. We both played the same home course growing up. I shot 30 from the tips. On the front nine, like, lowest, I wasn't even that good at the time. I was like 15 or 16 and just going lights out. And any other day, hole 12 is a par five where you can rip it over the corner, and if you don't catch it, you're reteeing. Like, that's it, bottom line. And any other day I would have done that, but I was like, I have this good round going. I can't fuck this up by getting too aggressive and taking out driver and doing that. So I pulled four iron to hit it down the fairway and yipped it into the trees anyway. So it's like, if you're having a round like that going, just stick to your guns and stay aggressive. But anyway, I know Mike's fired some low rounds. Let's hear about your lowest tournament round.
My lowest two are ball in hand. One at King's Lynx in a Vancouver event. I shot 12 under 60. And then in Hawaii in a pro-am, I shot 60, 11 under 61. And then in a skins game, I shot 62. And then
Jesus.
this year, from the forward tees in like a fun event, I broke 60 for the first time, which was fun.
Nice.
Even though it was from the front tees, it was still fun to shoot 59.
It doesn't count.
I know it doesn't count. I know it doesn't count, but it was still fun. And then shot 61 as well this year, just on like a fun day out. But what the one thing I'll say about the web.com, just going back, the fact that this guy was four shots lower than any other round that week kind of shows you how good his tournament round was. I think there was two 61s and maybe two 62s, but he was the only one in the 50s and he shot 57. So that's how much better his round was than everybody else's.
Yeah, that's a good point. Whenever there's a low round in the low 60s or 50s, it's good to compare it to everyone else's. And four shots is nothing to shake a stick at. That's separating yourself pretty good.
Not even lying, my 66 in the zone am was five shots better than the next score. So arguably, technically should count as a low 60s round, but
Love it. Craig was cooking. Okay, let's get into some betting here. Once again, the Bounce Back Bogey Pod goes 0 for everything. I don't know how many bets we put in, but all of them missed. Some of us may have won some money on the Super Bowl, who could say? Yeah, I had Dietrich to win. I think he finished mid-pack. Spieth MC did not happen. He had a pretty solid week, but expecting firm and fast conditions, and we got the soft week, and that's the Spieth special. So fuck that guy. And I took Patrick Reed to win on the LIV Tour. It did
he
not
won at
happen.
Chambers Bay.
Get the fuck out of here. I don't want to hear
Herman Fast.
that
DJ lost that tournament.
That was actually, if there's one major I'd want, actually, that's a pretty big statement. But I do wish that DJ did not three putt. That was tough. Mike had Minwoo Lee and Adwin Hadwin to Adam. Jesus Christ, bud, spit the words out. Adam Hadwin to win. Pick the wrong Canadian, buddy.
I know.
I
Yeah,
know.
so did I.
Oh yeah, Craig also had Hadwin. And who had Nick Taylor the week before?
Me
Craig
or
had Nick
yeah.
Taylor the week before. You know what we call that in the betting biz? That's flop leg. Flop leg is where you're playing poker, you got a hand, you got like pocket fours or whatever. The flop comes out like King Jack 10. Next hand, you have whatever, you fold your hand. Next hand, the flop comes out like four deuce deuce, and you flop a full house. That's flop leg. That's what you had this week. Little flop leg on your Taylor action. But bottom line, we didn't win. We're on to the Genesis Invitational, Tigers event. Tigers playing. That's always something after the Super Bowl. Just nutted a little bit. He partnered with TaylorMade, broke the sponsorship with Nike a few weeks ago. I do not like his new, I don't know if you guys have seen it, just came out a few hours ago, I think, his
I'm
new
buying one
look.
of his sweaters.
I think it's a tough scene. It's not the standard Nike that we're accustomed to. But anyway, I, even though I, like everyone, I think all of us on this podcast are Tiger lovers, I have this infatuation with betting him to miss cuts at events. So I am going to do that. It's an emotional hedge. I want to see him win. I want to see him do well. But if he misses the cut, I make a little money. So sue me. That's at 1.37 to 1. I'm putting five nuggies on that. And then I'm going to run it back with a Spieth miss cut at 5 to 1 for five nuggies. Mike,
Now,
what do you got?
Bray, do you know the rules for the Genesis this week with miscuts? I know it's all odds based already, but the scoring is different in terms
Oh.
of I think there's only 70 guys in the field. 50 make the cut plus 10 within the lead.
Well,
yeah, that's correct.
That's a tough scene. I would like to revoke my speed miss cut.
Can you do that, though? I think it's like Dave Portnoy pizza reviews. Once you say them, they're final.
Fine. Fuck it. We ride Tiger MC, Spieth MC. Those are my bets. $5 on each. Mike, what do you got?
I feel like as confident as I felt all year. I'm putting all 10 McNuggets on somebody that I said was going to be my disappointing player of the year, and that's JT, who's playing some great golf right now. I believe he's at 22 to 1, which is still, I think, pretty good odds.
That's good value.
Very good value. And I think he's been close to winning this year a couple times already, and I think he's going to push through this week.
Okay, so we all took drastically different approaches. I have all winners I'm picking. So I got Rory $2, just because these are all guys I just like. Max Homa $2. He's played well there in the past. I think he finished second last year, which technically it should be like when they go back in the Tour de France for guys doping, because Rom went to LIV and he won last year, so they should just give him the trophy now from last year. And then I got Morikawa for $2. He also, I think, plays pretty well here in the past. Scheffler for $2. I'm hoping he figures out the putting. If he can just be half decent on the greens, like, he'll win every week. So I know he doesn't probably have the best odds. Same with Rory, but I want to pick a winner more than anything. And then couple emotional, just guys I like. Tiger for $1, because why not? And then Jason Day for $1.
Jesus, you bet the whole fucking field here.
I know. I was Jackson.
Yeah, Craig's got money on half the field.
Okay, that's Rory, Max Homa, Morikawa, Scheffler, Day, and Tiger. And Day and Tiger are just $1. The rest are $2. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, I'll look up those odds later. But if half the field wins, then Craig's a winner. Good stuff. That was quite the segment. I did not know about the cut this week, but that's just the kind of podcast we're running here. Let's move along to cancel culture. Craigie, cancel someone's ass.
Yeah, so what I got this week is I think we're going to cancel broadcast quite a bit, but I'm canceling NBC for not showing Nick Taylor nearly enough towards the end of the tournament. So on the last few holes, they cut to him quite a bit. Until then, the guy got no respect on the coverage. I'm not usually a big, we need to show the Canadians more, even though I think they do a kind of a poor job of that. But I also get certain guys drive views. But Nick, honestly, is a four-time winner now. One was a secondary event or whatever it's called. But probably start putting some respect on his name after the amount of clutch putts he's made in the last year. It's pretty insane, especially after the Canadian Open. They were reading out the leaderboard and they went, I think it was Scheffler or Spieth, or yeah, maybe Scheffler was in first at the time, or Thigala, and Taylor was in second, and they talked about four guys around him and didn't even mention his name. I thought that was wild. So yeah, NBC canceling you. Not my usual pretend wokeness kind of cancel, but they're canceled.
Good stuff. Mike, cancel someone's ass.
Yeah, I mean, the easy way would be to cancel Billy Ho and Zach Johnson. I'm not going to do that. They're mm-hmm. already losers in my book, so yep. They don't need to be canceled. I will be canceling I believe it was the fire department of Phoenix who said it was unsafe at the tournament and actually stopped selling alcohol and letting people into the event.
Boo.
This is the People's Open. The People's Open. I don't care if they don't have tickets. You let them in. You let them make a fool of themselves. You let them heckle the players. This is once a year. I am disgusted and outraged that these people plan their entire year sometimes around the Waste Management Phoenix Open. They want to get drunk. They want to get belligerent. And you said, no, we're not going to let you have any fun. they are canceled this week.
Canceling the good Samaritans that are running the fire department in Phoenix. You hate to see it, but
firemen are terrible people.
I am canceling in line with Live Las Vegas and the Super Bowl being in Vegas. I'm doing a betting themed cancellation. I love playing poker. I love a little gambling. I love throwing chips around the table, spinning some cards. But I cannot stand people who use poker chips as ball markers on the green. I also cannot stand people that use tees as ball markers on the green. I see it a lot on those good videos and all that. Use a coin like a real man. Like, come on now. But the poker chip, you think you're cool, okay? You got your big poker chip that has the logo of your course or the logo of the nice course you played one time, Pebble Beach or Horry Pines or who the fuck knows. No, that I think it's toxic masculinity is what it is. You're saying, I bet. You know who doesn't gamble? Women. They just don't. So in general, it's just a sign of toxic masculinity. If you use a poker chip as a ball marker, canceling everyone who does that. You're done. Okay.
So sorry, Brandon, I love that. Now I'm going to tell a personal story and why this one hits home for me. So my college career, nothing to write home about. Okay. Nothing great. But that being said, I had one moment of almost glory. So first year conferences, finished last by about 10 shots. Last year, winning conferences by, I don't know, like probably a couple shots going into the back nine, playing really solid golf. We're playing Coeur d'Alene, Island Green, hit it on the green. No, that's a lie. Thinned it into the wind because I'm not a ball striker. Barely carries, catches the bunker, hit a nasty bunker shot, which is a terrifying bunker shot in an Island Green. Have like 8 feet for par. Nail, how did it go? I nail the par putt. I make par. Ethan, this guy from Western Washington, has like, I don't know, a decent, probably 12 feet for birdie. The third guy in our group is from, Mike, what was that school? The sixth school in GNAX that got axed. Concordia. This other guy in Concordia is using a poker chip ball marker. This motherfucker costed me conference championship. You might not believe this. I swear to God, it fucking happened. Ethan hits the putt, starts walking because it doesn't hit his line, kicks off the poker chip. It probably reflected like 6 inches back online, goes center cup into the hole.
Did it reflect it or did it deflect it?
It deflected. Sorry, fuck my brain.
Oh, good stuff, Craig. Not a GNX champion because some idiot out there was using a poker chip. Hate to see
it. I want him dead.
So that Bray, this is really on brand for me because I've already been canceled on the putting green for the putter that I use. What are your thoughts on free bet blackjack gold chips?
that's next level, D-Gen. If you're taking a free bet blackjack chip from the casino and throwing it down on the putting green, you need to call the number that you see on the gambling line. I think is what you need to do. But yeah, I love it. No, use a quarter. Like, come on now. That's what everyone needs to do out there. Or a little plastic thing that your club probably has, or a little shiny piece. I don't care. Just not something that's actually going to stop the ball or deflect the ball. Come on now.
Are you superstitious on what coin you use?
Actually, not really. But I do use, like, this isn't a superstition thing per se. I just have a lot of American quarters in my golf bag. So I use an American quarter.
I lose like 50 ball markers around. Everything's just falling out of my pockets. I'm a disaster. And then, but I do mark it heads up every time. And then when I move it, it's tails. So I know to move it back. But I think that's pretty common.
That's smart. Yeah, that's a good thing. I don't do that, but that's if you're playing competitive golf, everyone's had a time in junior golf or at some point where they forgot to move it back when they had to move it a putter length or two over. So That's a good way to avoid that. Any other thoughts before we wrap up, boys?
Real quick, back to Sunday Red. I'll be fast with this one. I think from what I saw, the color scheme and shit, the logo needs to change. Yeah. Like, he has to clue in and change that logo. And then the colors on the shirts were kind of weird, but I think he'll figure it out. It might be kind of a slow start, but if they just go to those Nike sweaters, like, Mike, I borrowed one of your Nike thin sweaters one morning in Arizona. I had never felt so confident. Oh my God. I think I played pretty decent that day too. And I just felt fucking jacked. It was amazing.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe the Sunday Red will grow, but I agree. I don't like the logo. The logo's not good. Not the Nike swoosh that is the iconic Tiger brand. Anyway, boys, that wraps up another podcast. Give us 5 stars on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on the socials. We'll start pumping out some content. But that wraps up another episode of Bounce Back OU Podcast. See you next week.
Beautiful. Loved it. See you, boys.
Hey, little girl, is your daddy home? Did he go and leave you all alone? I got a bad desire. Oh, I'm on fire. Tell me now, baby, is it good to you? And can he do to you the things that I do? Oh, no, I can take you high. It's like someone took a knife, baby, edgy and dull, and cut a 6-inch valley through the middle of my skull. At night I wake up with the sheets soaking wet and a freight train running through the middle of my head. Only you can cool my desire.